broadcasting live from Crazy Horse 3. It's Cofield and Company.
Trying to keep it in front, they score! It is Perron who has gotten the second goal of the game. Achari shaken up out of all of the confusion down on the ice. Fans are throwing stuff on the ice now. 1 second, and the Blues have the lead! 3-2, winning the contest by a score of 2-1. And more debris rains down here in Boston.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey! 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 Hey!
Let's go! You! Yeah! Let's go!
Now, here's Steve Cofield.
Wild and Woolly times last night in Beantown. They hate that. We'll get to the hockey inside of five. Fisticuffs. Embarrassing night for the Bruins, and even more embarrassing for Boston fans as they were throwing on each other. Their team fell down 3-2 in the series. But let's get to it.
It's time for The Three, presented by Cofield and Company's Happy Hour Fridays at Crazy Horse 3.
Presented by Today, right? 3-hour open bar. We are here. Game 4, NBA. We'll be watching it. Open bar, open bar, open bar. And the $5 food, dynamite. Dynamite. This is the spot to be on Fridays right across from Raider Stadium. Leave work, come here, get some pops, get some food, and watch the game. If you're an out-of-towner, if you're just coming into Vegas and you're like, oh, I was listening to the sports radio station and these guys are talking about a gentleman's club, it's a lovely place. You could do worse on a Vegas weekend, especially if it's your first Vegas weekend. Here's the thing. When you come to Vegas, what you hope for the first time, and this is really what Vegas, what they hope for, is that you have the time of your life. Like, almost impossible to top, right? I've talked about my first time in Vegas. I came cross country. I was driving with a friend who was getting a job here. Was checking things out. We come into town. We go downtown. I win money at craps. I find some lady from Iowa, get a little action. I mean, come on. Coldest room ever. I still remember the air conditioning at good old Bourbon Street when there was a hotel named Bourbon Street. Oh, my God. It was wonderful. It's all been really good since then.
The story sounds great, except for meeting a girl from Iowa.
She's pretty good. She's pretty good. Now, I think she may have just been using me as a side piece.
Okay.
You know how that works, right?
Yeah, of course.
Feels bad now. You know, feels bad now. I feel bad about it. Anyway,
I feel used.
I saw an interesting story about Vegas the first time from one Phil Baroni. You can only imagine where this is going. Tell the audience who Phil Baroni is, because maybe a lot of yous haven't been around long enough to know of Phil and his fighting days and his exploits away from the cage and the UFC.
I mean, I think he's still technically trying to fight somewhere, but he's a one of the old school UFC fighters, basically. You know, pre-skill. Hopefully he's not listening to hear that. You know, before everybody, like, great athletes were going to it, it was just guys that were fighters and just guys that went out and wanted to brawl and, you know, pick up some cash on the weekend kind of thing. The guy's, you know, he's a crazy fighter, a kind of a psychopath in and outside the cage, both. But, yeah, he's still fighting now. But, yeah, he's an interesting character, to say the least. No question about that. And, you know, when I saw his tweet about, you know, first time coming to Vegas, I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
He said, my first time in Vegas, I got an 8-ball.
Sure.
You know what that is, right?
Sure.
You and that cocaine crew?
Sure.
Cocaine koozie? He said, I got an 8-ball, two hookers, and fought Matt Lindland in the UFC.
That's a good Vegas experience.
I feel like your fight in the UFC should not involve that. Maybe after? Because then he said,
it's a precursor to John Jones.
Yeah. Actually, that was after the fight, I guess. I hope it wasn't before. 8-ball, two hookers, fought Matt Lindland. He said, pre-fight. No, this must have been post. No, it was pre. I lost my purse, so he lost all the money that he was going to make because he played blackjack for 2 days.
I mean, that seems like a perfect Vegas vacation. Like, that's what you want to do. You want to come out to Vegas, you want to fight somebody, preferably get paid for it in a cage, get a bunch of cocaine and two hookers, and just go to work. That's good. I guarantee he came back.
He did.
In fact, I think he lives here now.
Yes, he did many times, and he lived here for a while. And I'm not sure if he's living here again, but kudos to Phil. Maybe we want to cut out the eight-ball stuff. All right, last night, Boston in the center of another title run. This could be their third in 7 months. Meanwhile, during the day, you saw that the rings were handed out to the Patriots.
With the most gaudy and obnoxious rings of all time.
Here's the good thing about the Patriots. They're classy, they don't over-celebrate, and they didn't rub it in anyone's faces.
Yeah, okay. And they're, you know, Tom Brady didn't have to go try to show up every other quarterback by trying to chug beer, although he's not as good. We've heard the legendary tales, but he went for it.
Who'd he lose to?
I mean, I think he went dubs. I mean, kind of had to regroup.
I didn't
say
it.
Not acceptable.
Was it a contest, or was he just chugging it?
Yeah, I think he was just trying to show up everybody, like, on video. Like, hey, look, I'm going to do it, too.
Like a can of beer or a tall boy, or?
Yeah, that's a good point. I wasn't looking close enough. I just saw him go for it double. I think it was a cup.
Well, he and Belichick both made sure to take pictures with, like, 19 rings on their hands.
So stupid.
I think Belichick's got, what, 7? Because he goes back to the Giants days when he was a coordinator. So, I mean, he's going to have 10 if he keeps going like this.
He renames that stupid boat every year still, too. There's 7 rings or whatever it is.
I guess if you got it, flaunt it, but it is obnoxious. Yes. Especially from Brady, because I saw there was like a selfie with Brady and Giselle and one of the kids. I'm like, cut it out.
It's just everything about it.
Be classy, Tom.
Completely unbearable.
Be classy. Well, that wasn't what went down at the, whatever the garden is called now, in Boston. They lost. How'd they lose? And what happened in the game? We're not doing officials again after an NHL game. Really? Again with the officials?
Yeah, and it was... Listen, last night was... We keep saying this. It's as egregious as you can get. And you're... Every time you say, well, I mean, you don't see these things all the time, these egregious calls that essentially decide games. You're not going to see it again for a while, and it happens again. And last night... Now, there can certainly be debate about what would have transpired had the call been made... But it's 1-0. The Blues go up 2-0 off just a ridiculously obnoxious non-call over in the corner. You got a Bruins player going to play the puck, gets completely tripped from behind, both feet taken out with a stick, goes to the ground. St. Louis kind of scrambles for the puck. They get it over to the other side of the ice and get the puck in the net, go up 2-0. Bruins rally to make it 2-1. But could not get that second goal. The two-goal deficit proved to be too much. And, of course, because they lose by one, that one goal becomes the game winner. And you just look back on it and say, that should not happen. The ref was standing right there. If you watch the replay, he's right there. How do you not make that call? Now, oddly enough, I encountered a former Bruin last night while I was out. I was talking to him. He was certainly mad about the call. But at the same time, he was also mad at the player because he said... You get tripped, you fall on the ice, it's a clear penalty. Of course they have to call it, and it's egregious that they didn't and the ref shouldn't be around when they don't call it, but you also can't just lay on the ice and wait for the call, which I guess I can understand. But you should be laying on the ice waiting for the power play to start, waiting for them to take the guy over to the bench. Like, I get it, you have to just continue to play, but at some point you got to also look at the refs and say, what are you doing? Like, what? How are you allowing this? How is this not called when it's right in front of you? And it leads to a goal. So instead of a power play for the Bruins in the third period, down one, they're down 2-0. And they don't ever get the equalizer, and they lose the game. But you go back to the referees again, and it's just not acceptable. And you saw it coming out of the Bruins. Certainly the fans were furious. They were throwing things out on the ice. It was a complete mess. And you understand it, the front office, the general manager, the coach, the players, everybody was talking about the call after the game, as they should. It's egregious. And I know the St. Louis side is furious now. They're like, oh, it's taken away from, you know, our win. Everybody's focusing on that instead of, you know, us winning the game. This isn't fair. And that's one of the things I say all the time also. Like, the referees are not helping these teams. I mean, they are in the end helping them win championships, and that's all that matters. But then when you're going about this and you're rewarding teams, you know, by either making terrible calls or missing easy calls, you're also diminishing their accomplishments. Like, you are. And I know in the end, you know, 10 years from now, nobody's really going to remember. I'm sure people in Boston will, but most people won't remember the fact that, you know, this series was completely changed by a non-call. But right now, it's the focus. Instead of people recognizing what St. Louis did, it's, wow, how do the refs miss that call? That's not fair to them. And it's also, it's just not fair to the game. It's not fair to the fans. It's not fair to the team. Even when the call goes their way, it's just not. And like I said, I saw people in St. Louis today, you know, stop talking about the call. We won the game. Like, sorry. The biggest story is the call. They didn't make the call. That's not acceptable. They shouldn't be working games anymore if they can't make that call.
And it's been series after series.
Yeah.
I saw one of my pals, who's actually a St. Louis guy and a Blues fan, a guy, John Rabe, who I used to work with at good old Sports Fan Radio Network. He made the comment, you know, about the officials, and he said no one got it worse than the Golden Knights.
Yeah, that's true. Golden Knights certainly, with Dakota Eakin play. There was also the, you know, the hand pass in that next series that St. Louis got. So, you know, these things have been happening, you know, repeatedly and over, and not just in hockey and all sports, but last night you had Bruins president Cam Neely hurling a water bottle against the wall. That was on TV. Everybody was seeing that.
I like that. That's my move.
That was good. That was solid. But then you also had Bruce Cassidy, the coach of the Bruins, call it egregious. He went on to say it's a black eye for the entire NHL. He was asked what the reaction was. He said, the reaction was you missed an effing call. That was what was being said on the bench for obvious reasons. The no call on Akiyari. Their player is on his way to the box. It's right in front of the official. It's a slew foot. Our guy's gone. The spotter took him out of the game for a possible concussion. I mean, it's blatant. It had a big effect on the game. And that is, it's absolutely true. And it's not acceptable. It's just not. And that's, you know, that's what comes out of the game as being the story.
Have we heard from Pete DeBoer? Is he angry that people are making excuses and complaining about the officials, the Sharks?
I don't think
coach,
so.
Boss. No, he doesn't have a comment on this series?
I'm sure he does if somebody asks him. I haven't seen anybody ask.
He's very concerned when people complained about officiating in past series.
Well, and then when it went against him, he was not upset.
Right.
He was not happy with it. But
of course.
I say that all the time. Like, again, I just referenced it, but I say it again. And that's why I say to you guys out there, when a call goes your way, you should be just as outraged. When a terrible call goes your way, you should be just as outraged as the team that it goes against. You should. And this is why. Because it's going to come back on you, and you really don't have the right anymore to get outraged about it. If when it went your way, you were like, hey, that's just the game, that's the officials, then you don't have the right to be mad when it goes against you. So you should be just as outraged. St. Louis Blues fans should be just as outraged as Bruins fans that they won the game last night in large part. It wasn't just because of that call in this case. Sometimes it is. In this case, it wasn't. But in large part, you won that game because of an atrocious call. Atrocious non-call, as it were. But you should be just as mad as Bruins fans are.
Funny thing here is you mentioned that the story out of the game was the officiating and the bad calls. That was for hockey fans. For sports fans, we'll come back with what the big impression was from the game, and that was the Boston fans in the stands acting like complete animals.
The Three is brought to you by Cofield and Company's Happy Hour Fridays at Crazy Horse 3. Steve is covering the drinks. It's a three-hour open bar with $5 food. Happy Hour Fridays at Crazy Horse 3. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Let's all celebrate by going and getting some Dunkachinos and having some of what I like to call breakfast. That's when I have a 30 rack of Sammy Adams that I drink with my two front teeth. That's sexy. So's my accent. If you've seen my friend Charlene, please let me know. Last time I saw her was 2 weeks ago at a pub we were getting kicked out of.
You know, we try to tell you, don't root for Boston in any sporting event. I mean, that lady was pretty hot talking about the Sammy.
Well, the accent is. We know that from the, you know, hottest accent bracket.
Their fans are passionate, but they're a nightmare. They're overly sensitive. They've come to expect winning and no criticism. Say anything. Possibly suggesting the Patriots won't win a Super Bowl. That means you're ripping the Patriots, according to Boston backers. And then there's the next level of that Northeast corridor, right? Philly always gets the rap that they're animals, dirtbags, out of control, violence. And then we see some videos emerge from the Bruins game against the Blues as Boston is falling down in the series 3-2. What came out on the first video appears to be in the upper levels. And, man, there's nothing worse than seeing fans who are losing a game go after the opposing fans. Oh, wait. That's not what happened here.
You mean their own fans?
Boston fans started fighting Boston fans.
Well, it happens.
Well, it happens.
You're not used to losing. Things start to happen. And, I mean, there's a bunch of videos that were out there. One in particular that really went viral and making the rounds was like a bigger dude challenging another guy. Like, come on, bring it on, bring it on.
Boston Let's camouflage go. Guy against smaller guy.
Yeah.
Boston camouflage guy is like, okay, let's go. And all of a sudden,
he's calling him over, like, let's go, let's go, let's do it. And the littler guy thought better of it and instead just doused him with a beer, which triggered bigger guy to go after him and start throwing haymakers. And then other people from other rows just start getting involved. Somebody's trying to pull a shirt off of somebody. It's just a mess. But it's not even a mess. It's just Boston. It's whatever's going on in the streets of Boston coming into the arena. Really no difference.
It happens everywhere, Adam.
It actually does kind of happen everywhere. It's just great.
How many fight videos did we see at VGK games with Golden Knights fans fighting Golden Knights fans? None?
I'm trying to think. I've definitely seen a couple.
I've seen one up on the concourse, and I don't know if it was VGK on VGK.
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, I think these things, well, you know, passions are much higher at this time of year. We know that. And as I said, they're not used to losing. They don't really understand what
happens. Golden Knights were in the Stanley Cup Final last year. Do we have videos of them fighting each other in the Stanley Cup Final?
I don't remember seeing videos. I remember seeing fights. I don't know that it was Golden Knights fans against Golden Knights fans, as you said. I don't know.
Without a video,
this year they weren't there.
Without a video, I can't believe.
Okay.
That there was fights.
Fair enough. We see this video. We see, and it's happening. It's going on out there. It's like I said. I'm not surprised by it. It's all obviously drunk people that are very tense in an emotional setting, and these things happen. It's crazy. I love when people get videos of it. Sometimes I think they happen too quickly for people to shoot video, and that's disappointing. Like, I want video of everything that ever happens.
The great thing on this video is the person who is filming it is pretty close to the action. I mean, they're at risk. And, you know, if you don't believe it, you watch the video. Chrissy, if we could tweet that out if people haven't seen it yet, at ESPN Las Vegas. As you watch the video, you see camouflage guy, smaller guy, beer gets thrown, camo guy, smaller guy, start to tussle, then it goes into the row in front of them. So if you're trying to film in the row in front, then you're getting spilled on. This person appeared to be just behind them.
Yeah.
So they could have gotten it. Then all of a sudden, to the left, two other guys start fighting. I noticed camo guy gets top control because, you know, he kind of hurtled over the seats on top of the other dude. I swear the other guy was trying to throw on like a triangle. He's on the bottom. He's trying to use his legs to lock him up. Then they get up. Somehow the guy gets up, the guy on the bottom. As they're standing, then camo guy starts to lift, you know, kind of trying to front choke, like a some sort of choke.
So they're into it.
Yeah, they're using those moves. I mean, the other thing that's really scary, I don't know if the Garden in Boston, I mean, it's a relatively new arena. I don't know if they didn't build it with the same grade, the same slope as T-Mobile. I'm afraid to walk at T-Mobile. Like, I could see getting in a fight and starting to tumble and just going down to the lower level. It's scary up there. So yeah, these guys, they're angry, they're lunatics, they're dangerous, they should be arrested. They're also seemingly putting their lives at risk fighting in the upper deck.
Theirs and other people's, if you tumble down and start knocking people down with you, too. I think the chairs will save you because they're kind of in the middle of the row. So I think it'll work out in that capacity. But, yeah, it's incredibly dangerous, and it's stupid. I will also say, if you're drunk and don't have any jiu-jitsu experience, don't try to throw a triangle when you're on the bottom position. Like, it's not going to work, and it's just going to open you up for more shots.
Have you been bottom position? And this is not like a sexual thing. Have you been bottom position when you and your brother have gone at it?
I mean, it's happened.
Two late 30-something guys fighting?
It's happened.
You've actually been in a bad position? Did you try to throw your chunky legs up on his shoulders and start to choke him?
No, usually that's not the best strategy.
Like, you better really know what you're doing.
Yeah,
you're trying to throw a triangle choke on someone from the bottom when you're, oh, God. Think about this, too. The concentration it takes to try to throw a submission in an arena fight as you're landing on the ground. What is on that ground in the third period? Oh, God.
I mean, I don't think you're thinking about that. I think you're just trying to survive and do whatever you can. But I would much more recommend, like, trying to isolate an arm and just trying to use it to, you know, control position and try to, you know, try to reverse and get back on top position instead of trying to throw any submissions on from the bottom. That's highly recommended in an arena fight, I feel like.
What a disaster.
Yeah.
And then there was a second fight that came out on video. This one was, it looked like upper level, but closer to one of the exits, you know, one of the portals. And, man, it looked like some Blues fans were just beating the snot out of some Bruins fans. And there was a Blues fan who was on top of some Bruins fan, like, actually choking him. We're not talking like, hey, here's a rear naked choke. Let's be responsible and put him to sleep. Like, just straight out, one hand on the neck, choking.
Yeah, going for the strangulation. I mean, that's one way to go about it in a fight, I guess. I don't know that anybody's going to step in or tap out. I don't know how that works. Hopefully you're not strangling somebody all the way until they die. But, yeah, this I like the amateur jiu-jitsu we see in a lot of arena fights. It's fun. A lot of street fights, you see that go on. UFC has kind of ruined that. Like, people think they can just throw on submission moves. Like, it's that easy. Like, guys haven't been training for their whole life. You're not going to do it. You're not going to pull it off.
Who was that kid we saw that was, like, 11 who freaking was, like, throwing high kicks and then throwing on a choke from the bottom?
I think that kid was like 6.
Yeah, and he was trained.
Yeah. Well, but he's training.
He's a prodigy.
These people are not.
He's not camo guy.
Plus, I don't think this kid is doing that, like, you know, drunk on the floor of an arena with chairs all around.
You don't think the child was drunk at school?
I don't think so.
You can never tell.
You never know. I mean, it's possible. Maybe that's why he was aggressive.
Some parts of the country, they start him early.
Put beer in the thermos instead of soup or something? I don't know.
Oh, the thermos. Yeah, I forgot about the old thermos. Kids use... That's a topic. This is a long topic. Do kids use thermoses today?
I doubt it. I think they have, like, juice boxes and sodas.
Did you do the soup in a thermos?
No.
Are you of that era?
No.
How'd you know about that?
Other kids did.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yeah.
Well, why are you saying it like you're denigrating them?
Couldn't afford soup.
All right, we got to examine this on the way back. Very interesting. I couldn't afford soup. Apparently, the Braves can only afford $13 million and couldn't afford a closer. Did they make the right choice in going with Dallas Keuchel over Craig Kimbrell?
Cofield and Company will be back in 90 seconds. Keep it here on ESPN Las Vegas. Cofield and Company is back on ESPN Las Vegas.
More runs, right in the air deep. Is it enough? It's gone!
Boy, I like Chris Bryant, but you know I got that, 18-year bet. Gallo v. Bryant v. Harper. That was a walk-off for Chris Bryant, hometown guy. I think he's got 13 now. Poor Joey has the strained oblique, so he's sidelined. They're both actually ahead of the $330 million man, Bryce Harper.
It's going to be – he's way ahead for his career, though. It's going to be tough for, you know, Joey Gallo to catch up while he's sitting on the bench.
Gallo would have to hit like 40 homers a year for 13 years, and Bryce would have to check in with an average of like 26. So it'll be tough.
Seems like you've done the math on this.
I want to win this bet. It's one of the great predictions of all time. While everyone was raving about Bryce Harper 3-4 years into the league, I threw this at one Wally Backman, and I was talking about who has the most raw power, and he laughed at me. He actually didn't say Bryce Harper. He said Chris Bryant.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, my friend. My guy Joey, he's coming. And he was still in the minors at that point. But, you know, he's probably like 225 pounds at the time. Like, he's 6'5", 240 now.
Big fella. Spring it. Big
fella.
But then, you know, when you're a bigger fella, you sometimes strain your oblique. Sometimes happens.
Are you accusing my guy Joey of being out of shape? I mean, he's not a...
No.
Who was the guy we were watching yesterday? I looked up, and I'm like, whoa, who is that? I think that guy's one of my favorite players now. Turned out to be Tyler White.
Yeah.
I guess I'd never looked at a photo of Tyler White or not watching enough Astros games.
He's like an Evan Gattis clone.
I did say that.
Yeah.
How heavy do you think Tyler White is? Because he's very slovenly. He's wearing a very loose uniform.
I feel like he's short, though.
Okay, make a prediction.
I'm gonna.
Because here's the thing, folks. Like, this is a lifestyle for me. I love fat athletes. I love oddities. I love short athletes.
I'm going to say 5'10", 239.
Come on. Really?
Everything over 239 is 239.
You keep doing the 239 because of my guy Trump.
Yeah.
He's actually, ready? He's 5'11", 238.
What? Wow. That was close.
You got it.
That was impressive.
Are you working one of the fairs this summer?
No, because I'm terrible. Bad at that.
Are you a carny weight guesser?
No, I'm so bad at that. I honestly wasn't even trying to guess. I was just saying 239 because of Trump. But yeah, there's, by the way, no way he's 238 either. There's no way.
No, not at 5'11.
No, no chance.
I told you, the only guy who I don't think lies about his weight is, there's two of them. Framil Reyes, who's 6'5", 292. And Reyes Maranta, who is listed somewhere between 5'8 and 5'10, but he does have his weight down at 257.
No, he's...
You think he's bigger, too?
He's 5'8", 341.
That's a squatty individual.
He's squatty.
5'8", 341.
He's pretty squatty.
That's a nose tackle you bring into a D2 program, and you're like, we're going to get you closer to 305. I don't think 341 is going to work, fella.
Try to slim you down a little bit.
Yes, just a little. All right, enough of the squatty, fat baseball players. Dallas Keuchel, who's actually bigger. Let's just keep doing this. Actually bigger than you'd think. He's closer to 6'2", 6'3". I thought he was a short guy. But he has signed with the Braves. He signed a one-year deal for $13 million. Adam, why did this happen, in essence, on June 5th or 6th?
Because before June 3rd, teams had to give up draft picks in order to sign these guys. So we saw Kimbrel and Keuchel finally able to reach deals because teams wanted them, but they didn't want to give up picks in addition to signing them to contracts. So now they can just sign them, bring them in, and not have to pay any compensation. And so that's why you're seeing guys finally come to terms after a couple months when they could have been playing baseball.
The Cubs got closer Craig Kimbrel 3 years with a fourth-year option. About the same money. Obviously, there's more risk with a longer contract. Who made the right move for the pennant chances? Because they're both in the running.
Yeah, I mean, I think they both did. I don't know that. I think they filled needs, and so it's good from both perspectives. The Cubs certainly bolster their bullpen. That is it was an area of concern, and so they got much, much better in the bullpen. He had a great year last year. As long as he can get up to speed fairly quickly, I think that's a really good signing. And the Braves, not only did they sign a starting pitcher, which they need, it really helps them out in terms of what they want to do, but I think they also sent a message to the team of saying, like, hey, we believe in you, and we're going to put the resources out there to help you guys get to where you want to be and where you are capable of being by trying to win this year and win a division and go and potentially compete for a title. So I think they both made signings, but I think if you have to say which one is better, I'm going to say the Braves from all of that perspective of just what the signing means to the fans and to the team and to the players and everybody else that they're committed for this year.
Yeah, I disagree. I think it was Kimbrel, and I think it's a bigger need. Their bullpen is kind of a mishmash of guys that no one has heard of. This dude, Luke Jackson, has done a decent job, but other efforts to fill that closer position turned into a freaking disaster. They need a closer. I think they have enough pitching, and I think they have enough young pitching up and on the way that they could have made it without Keuchel, and they should have spent the extra money on Kimbrel. And, you know, it's funny. We were looking up numbers yesterday. They just traded for a guy named Anthony Swarzak, who really is just a middle reliever. He's had a couple of moments where he's gotten on a hot streak for 2 months and closed, but that guy makes $8 million. So, and I know, again, Kimbrel is a long-term investment, but you already had him. You know him. He's familiar with the park. Well, maybe not that park, but he's familiar with the market. I think it's going to cost the Braves in the end. Now, they could still go out and trade for more bullpen help. It won't cost them $40 million. I did see a shot. I think it was an ESPN writer took a shot at the Braves, calling them cheap, that they run things, who is it, Liberty Media owns them, and they run things more like a business than a ball club. So they were saying this move was made because they're freaking cheap.
Yeah, I mean, well, they could have just not signed anybody. They could have just played with what they have, and they've been playing very well, and say, hey, we think we have enough. So it shows that they at least are willing to commit something. and spend. But, I mean, you're right. If you look at their payroll, they really don't have many guys making a whole lot of money. They made a splash with Donaldson, obviously, in free agency at about 23. And
Freeman makes a lot. They're at $115 million for a payroll, so that's not on the high end.
No, not at all. And with, you know, with a new stadium and all that was supposed to bring in terms of increased, you know, luxury box revenue and all that, you would think that they'd be willing to spend more, but they did it a different way. They got a bunch of young guys, and now they're adding to it and, you know, spending their money outside of the organization, and then they'll have to re-up some of the guys they have within the organization, so the payroll will go up in that way. But I think this shows they're at least, you know, going to be somewhat committed.
I would take the Cubs rest of the season for more wins, and I expect the Cubs to do more come playoff time over the Braves. Sounds like we're being very negative. No, but we, you know, we're fired up for teams to do well and spend money, and the more competitive teams in baseball, the better it is for us, the viewers and the fans, and especially the fans in the local market. We love baseball. It doesn't feel awkward now spending like 7 minutes on baseball?
Yeah, a little bit.
Like, I don't know if I feel bad for the audience. I'm like, I don't know if this is working. You never used to think about this 20 years ago doing sports talk radio. It's sad for baseball. It's sad.
Well,
we could do it every day, but
sure.
Not sure that's desired anymore.
Yeah, and I think you just don't see as many maybe big stories popping up out of baseball all the time. I don't know why that is. If people aren't covering it as much, I don't know. But I think you're right. There's not as many issues and stories that come up necessarily now that have to be addressed.
We love baseball so much. We like bringing you happy stories, and even stories where we can get on someone. You know. I want you to – this to me was a story of the month of May, one of the videos of May, but we never got to it. We're like a week late on this, but we just ran out of time every day. And I was thinking of this. I was thinking of this today. You know, the joy of having a ball hit in the stands, and hopefully it doesn't hit your kid or hit you in the face, but the joy of a ball coming into the stands and then the race to go get the ball. This scenario on Big Ten championships, and I'm guessing Adam is going to be right along with the announcers. There's an adult – who's a little too aggressive around a child.
Look at this. The Iowa fan took it away from the Ohio State kid.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, boy. That guy is about to get roasted in social media.
Is he going to get roasted on this show?
Definitely not. First of all...
He's a little kid. What's wrong with you?
Well, first of all, Ohio State fan. So, I mean, it's easy.
So even at, like, 8... That's it. They're hated enemies.
Of course. I mean,
of course.
Yes, they have to learn. And he should know better than to go along with his parents' horrific decision to make him a Ohio State fan. He should cheer for a real team. So in this case, you watch it. Now, I don't want anybody pushing kids. I don't want anybody knocking them down.
The kid appeared to be late to the party.
Yeah, the kid was running up from a higher row. The adult was reaching over to the row behind him to try to pick up the ball. He gets there first. He grabs the ball just before the kid makes it. He has every bit of right to that ball that the kid does.
Are you seriously laying out a really strong case that Iowa adult should be ripping the ball? Well, he didn't rip it from him.
He got there first.
Stealing the ball from an 11-year-old.
He got there first. He wants the ball. He went after it just like the kid did. Again, I don't want – if the kid gets it first, I don't want him knocking it out of his hand or, like, tackling him and taking it away, anything like that. I don't want him shoving anybody out of the way or pushing the kid down to get the ball. But if you get there first, that's your ball. Now, sure, if you want
to give 11!
If you want to give it to the kid, fine, whatever. But you don't. You have no obligation whatsoever to give the ball to the kid. You paid for your ticket. The kid probably didn't even pay for his ticket. His parents probably did. So you paid.
That's
you.
Yeah,
you paid for the ticket. You want the ball. You get the ball. He got there again. He raced him to the ball. He got the ball first. He gets the ball.
We love Happy Hour Fridays here at Crazy Horse 3. We like to call them No Conflict Fridays, right? That was Doug Marsh's term, No Conflict Fridays. Of course, if it involves a child with Ohio State gear on, then there's going to be plenty of conflict.
Screw that kid.
Speaking of conflict, on the way back, a cheesy segue, but UFC this weekend, it's a pay-per-view. We're going to get into the card itself, but more importantly, how you're watching the card, because this is a whole new ball game now that UFC has signed with ESPN and is on ESPN Plus.
Cofield and Company's Happy Hour Fridays at Crazy Horse 3. Steve is covering the drinks. It's a 3-hour open bar with $5 food. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
You know, no one cared if guys are hurt. Everybody wants to see us lose.
So I'm sure people are happy they're hurt. We just got to continue the battle and win the next game, go back to Toronto, win game 5, come back to Oracle, win game 6, and then celebrate. Fun times ahead.
All right, a very organized Draymond Green talking about the plan for the comeback. Certainly the Warriors not dead and buried. We're hanging out at our Friday spot, Crazy Horse 3, open bar, 3 hours. We're off at 5 for pregame of game 4, but we'll be here watching the game, and open bar goes until 6, happy hour goes until 8. It's Cofield, Jeff, Adam Hill. We got UFC this weekend. You can actually watch UFC 238 here. $20 buckets. That's very cool. Prizes. But they have all the big UFC and boxing cards right here at Crazy Horse 3. It's right across from Raider Stadium. Right near the 15 off of Russell. I want to break down the card in a second because there's some really good fights at the top of this card. But I've been saving this one for at least a couple of days. What is going on with the UFC now and ESPN? Their whole pay-per-view plan is different.
Yeah. You can only, as a consumer at home, you can only order pay-per-views through ESPN Plus now. So you can't really get it through your cable provider or from you know, Dish TV or Dish Network or DirecTV, anything like that. So you got to order through ESPN Plus. And, you know, we don't really know the details of the deal and everything that was signed, but it really seems like ESPN basically just paid UFC a flat fee for all of the pay-per-views, and the UFC really doesn't care if you buy it anymore.
Which is bizarre. Because yep. Pay-per-view was the whole deal in the past. It's how they made, you know, the lion's share of their money, and now the plan has changed. But what it's done for viewers, I think it's really confused people. Have you heard complaints about it? Because it's only streaming, so just to get the hookup sometimes is difficult. I think people are, you know, if you don't watch a pay-per-view card, or if you haven't recently, then you don't know, and all of a sudden you're trying to watch a big pay-per-view, and you're like, where the hell is it?
Yeah, I've definitely heard from people, and you see it on Twitter every time, like somebody who hasn't ordered a pay-per-view in a while, and they go, and they're like, what's going on? It won't let me order the pay-per-view. Like, you can't do it anymore. You have to have ESPN Plus. You have to be a subscriber. You have to go through that. So I think people are still learning, and it's going to take some really massive pay-per-views where people are really trying to buy it, and they realize like they don't get to. I think people are learning every single card, like, oh, this, you know, this is how it's done now, this is the process. But it's going to take one of those, you know, a Conor McGregor card where you're like, how come I can't order this? Like, you can't do it anymore. You have to go through ESPN Plus. It's the only way to do it. So I think people are still learning, and they'll eventually get to that. I think a lot of people are going to try to buy this card because it's really good. And, you know, we'll see how people react tomorrow when they find out they have to get through ESPN Plus.
Do you think they've cut down on the cheating? Not the fighters.
No.
I'm talking about the stealing of the pay-per-view.
Oh, I think it's way more.
You think it's more?
Yeah.
Because I noticed about a week ago, Brendan Schaub, who used to fight in the UFC, is now a comedian. He was talking to one of his buddies.
It sounded sarcastic, Steve.
He tweeted out to a comedian, Brian Callen, actor, hey, where are you watching the fight tonight? And it got into this whole thing about going to Reddit. And all of a sudden, a really popular Reddit site that used to have the fights, not that I've ever used it, but used to have the fights, pulled down, and a lot of the folks, you know, MMA fans in the MMA community were like, Schaub, what are you doing here? Right. You just screwed us over, Brendan Schaub.
Yeah.
Now, there is a battle behind the scenes between ESPN and Reddit, because Reddit's all about internet freedom, and ESPN's like, no, you're not stealing our stuff. So this is a whole new battle. UFC used to have to fight this battle against piracy. Now ESPN has to fight Reddit.
Well, I think it also goes without saying, like, the harder you make it to order something, the more likely people are to try to find a way to get it without paying for it. Like, if you have to go through the process of becoming an ESPN Plus subscriber and then subscribing to ESPN Plus, and then, by the way, like, some people have ESPN Plus only on their phone or only on their computer, and they want to watch on TV, so then they have to, you know, stream it from your phone, you know, either, you know, Chromecast it or however you're going to put it through your phone through to your TV. Like, you're just making people take all these steps, and I think, not that it's right, but I think the more hindrances you put in the way of people ordering something and actually paying for it, the more people are going to try to cheat and steal and stream it. So that's a problem that they're going to have to face, and that's a problem they're going to have to deal with. And it's going to be ongoing. And certainly ESPN is going to put all of their resources into trying to make sure people aren't stealing it, because, you know, they paid for this product, and they need to make their money back off of it. And I know they're fairly happy with how they're how they're doing it and how people are getting the service and watching UFC through it. But it's a long process for them too.
I want to talk about this card. So we've got UFC 238 coming up. You can watch it right here at Crazy Horse 3. You can watch all the big fights at Crazy Horse 3. $20 buckets, prizes. It's free to get in. They're actually going to offer pizza for free. They've got a 24/7 restaurant here. It's awesome. We had the pizza a couple weeks ago. Absolutely dynamite. What's your favorite fight on this card? I'm guessing it's not the title fight. The title fight is between Henry Cejudo and Marlon Moraes. Although that is a good fight. And
fantastic
when you look
fight
at the odds, the champ is not the favorite. And
no champ. Vacant title.
That's a good point. What happened to the belt?
Was that
Dillashaw?
It was TJ Dillashaw's
that's
title.
Right. You know what? I'm thinking 125. Yeah. Now we're talking 135. Thank you for the correction there. But, yeah, Moraes is a 130 favorite.
Well, it's Cejudo's first time coming up to 135. Moraes has been on a really good run as far as finishing guys very early. I know Cejudo said it's a bag of tricks, and he tried to represent that yesterday by pulling a rabbit out of his hat and then kicking it. It was a very weird, everything Henry Cejudo does is cringeworthy for the most part.
You don't think he's a natural promoter? He's kind of a fake guy?
No, but he's a – I really like him. I've had fantastic just conversations, normal, non-interview just conversations with Henry Cejudo as a person. Very fascinating person, gold medalist, from his upbringing to everything else. It's great, but when he tries to, promote and be a character, it just doesn't work. It's not him. But it was very goofy yesterday. He tried it. But when they actually step in, it's a really good fight. I think even though the odds are out of whack and Jessica Ai and Shevchenko, that's an interesting fight too, because Jessica Ai has always been a 125er. Every time she fought at 135, she would say, yeah, that's fine, but I'm a 125er. I need 125. I need to fight there. Shevchenko too, much more natural 125. Jessica Ai has been very good since they created the 125 class. She overcame so much in her life to get to this point, and she's moved to Las Vegas to focus. First time she's been in Las Vegas for a training camp. We'll see if she's a different fighter, but she's going to have to make up a lot of ground to get to where Shevchenko is. Shevchenko is just better in pretty much every area, but Jessica Ai is very tough. So I think that line is insane.